You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And we are live. Another edition of Advantage Connors. As always, your host, Brett Connors, here with my co-host, Jimmy. What's going on today?
Yeah, it's another day, beautiful in Santa Barbara, sun shining. Summer's over. The last Grand Slam in men's tennis at the U.S. Open, that's in the past. Days are starting to get shorter, and you're starting to roll into autumn and winter time. I got to admit, I don't like that. I like it when the sun's up until 8 o'clock or so, and we have a nice sunset. But the longer days are better for me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of the short days in the winter. But to be honest, you wouldn't know it was fall or winter time coming here soon if you looked out the window. It's about 78 degrees and sunny down here in LA. How's it up there in Santa Barbara?
Yeah, we're suffering. it's about the same. It's beautiful, and I was reading an article the other day, Brett, in the paper about the heat that we've had around the country, and I was reading the article, and I didn't really take into consideration a lot of schools are back, and a lot of the schools aren't air conditioned, and with the heat and, these kids going into classrooms, it's, I remember back in Illinois when I was growing up, starting and right after Labor Day and that heat for a while, it was rough, sometimes tough to keep your concentration like that. But, the kids are back in school and summer's over. Man, it's gone quick. Oh, can't believe it.
It's gone quick, but fall means football. And talk to me. Did you see any of the games over the weekend, this past weekend? There were some crazy comebacks.
Yeah, well, your Dolphins had one. Mm-hmm. That I think that's got to give you a little confidence in your quarterback there, doesn't it now? I mean, wasn't it up in the air? How is he? Is he good? They gave up draft picks to get him. And after his showing on the weekend, three touchdowns and coming from behind, and that's pretty strong performance.
Six total. Almost 469 yards. They didn't start well. They gave up the opening kickoff, and they gave up an 80-yard run to Lamar Jackson. They gave up a long pass. So down 21 going into the fourth. But we didn't stop. Tua kept going, and so did the receivers. Hill and Waddle are ridiculously good. So back.
It's been a long time since the Dolphins have had two guys that have put up those kind of numbers, right?
Probably not since Super Duper, no one's ever put up those kind of numbers. But not since we've had the Marx brothers, of Clayton and Duper, back in the '80s, early '90s, when those guys were going off with Marino.
Yeah, they were exciting. That was exciting, geez. It seems to, let's don't get ahead of ourselves, but that's got to be, for the Dolphins. And, I keep saying that you for an forever fan of the Dolphins since you were, two or three years old. I mean, you have stuck with them, but that's got to be, encouraging to see, you know, what kind of team you have so far.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm wearing my Dolphin shirt right now, pathetically, as we sit here recording, but it gives me hope, confidence. I'm not getting over my skis too far because we got the Bills this week at home, and the Bills look like they might be the best team in football so far this year. And that's a rivalry going back, you know, decades. But it, to talk about Tua, it was just gratifying because for 2-3 years, people, he's eaten a lot of shit. People have talked a lot of shit about him. And all, I mean, he's, but coming into this year, he's got a win. He's had a winning record. He hasn't had a lot of weapons. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of got thrown in there probably too early his rookie year. You know, coming into this year, his top receiver, besides last year, I mean, he had Waddle, but Parker had been hurt in and out, no running game. You know, Gesicki was kind of their only target in the passing game. And so now you throw Hill in there. They got a couple of good running backs with Mostert and Edmonds from Arizona coming in. So now there's some weapons. And so now it's like, well, you know, let's see how he can do, you know, let's actually analyze his performance on what he does when he actually has some people to throw to. And then our coach McDaniels, the new guy that we got from San Francisco, the young kid seems to know how to put the ball in his hand and to get it quick out to the receivers who are, you know, great across the middle. And I mean, I'm just happy for him because everyone's shit on him for 3 years. And then now all the hacks, can I say that hard enough? All the hacks who have been dogging him for 3 years are now coming around and like hedging their bets going like, well, this is his breakout year. See, it's just either way, they're going to say they told us so. It kind of makes me want to puke. But,
oh God, you know, but for but, one you know week, the good thing is, you know, for him to, you know, to have that confidence, all that kind of performance that he had last week, you know, is going to give him confidence, that not only in himself, but also in his teammates and his players that, you know, he has the confidence to go to, and they're going to, you know, do whatever they can to, you know, to help him out too, you know, which is, you know, it's interesting, you know, talking, you know, team competition with me, you know, and, you know, if you're interested in team competition, they've got the President's Cup on TV for golf right now, but, you know, team competition, you know, and having to rely and depend on, you know, other players and, you know, how did they sleep last night? Do, you know, any arguments with, you know, with the family or any, you know, any right. problems that they've had or, you know, so many things, you know, can go through your mind and affect you. And, you know, when you're relying on, you know, in basketball, 4 other guys on the floor with you or football, you know, with 11 other guys on the field and you know, worrying about that. But when they all come together and they play teamwork, you know, everybody on the same page, pretty fun to watch. I will say it's, you know, and to see, you know, the fourth quarter of that was pretty exciting. I'll be honest, that almost got me back into laying a bet. I still haven't yet.
Yeah, someone tells me you might flirt with that as the season goes on. But I mean, yeah, I was at work. They were down 21. I left work. I came home. They were down 14. And right as I turned it on, they scored. I came home. I threw my jersey on. I have a Tua jersey, of course. So I came home. I threw it on. They scored like 2 minutes later. And then they get the ball back, make them go 3 and out, and boom, another long pass. I'm like, it's the jersey. Like, I put the jersey on and they scored 2 touchdowns. Like, you know, I'm like jumping around, going crazy. And Melina's looking at me like I'm nuts, you know, because she's never like, I've never seen a game like that before, especially the way it's set up. And I'm like, you know, it's just, there's so few games in the NFL, you know, there's only 17 games and, you know, you're going to win some easy. You're going to lose some bad. There's like, you know, so there's this, so much law of averages and then all the stuff that goes into eating shit when your team is bad, you know, it's just like so gratifying when you actually get like a moment where like it all right. comes together and it all lines up and you're just like, wow, you know, like it's so funny how much it can positively affect you when it's like, you know, it's these other guys. I'm not really on the team. I say we, it's not me, it's them, you know, but you still feel like part of it.
In a way it is you. I mean, you know, you being a fan, I mean, that's what, you know, that's why stadiums are sold out. You know, that's why, you know, winning the U.S. Open for me a couple times, you know, it wasn't them in the stands, but they helped me win. Right. You know, so, I mean, you gotta give, you know, the fans are such a big part of it. You know, you know, during COVID, you got to look that, you know, stands were empty. You know, right. How do you like playing in front of that? Yeah, you know, I mean, you still go out and you're going to give it your best and everything, but you like that feedback. You like, you know, when you do something good, when you make a spectacular reception or a great pass or an unbelievable move to get into the end zone, you want that response from, you know, from the fans. Mm-hmm. And all that does is drive you to get, you know, to be better and to, you know, and say, you know, God, what a feeling that was. I want to go and try to do that again. But so, you know, when you say we, you're right. It is, you know, what is we? But sometimes that we is a big factor in winning some of those games like that.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, that was a fun one. I'm happy for him, but I'm not expecting that every week. I mean, he's going to have good weeks and have bad, but just to know that the potential for that is there and that he's got some weapons now, it's going to be more of a fun year going forward.
Well, you're 2 weeks into it and you got a smile on your face. We're going to talk about them a week after week, because I know, you know, you say Molina saw you jumping around, but we kind of been watching that for about, oh, I don't know, 40 years now,
right?
You know, the way you react to your Dolphins, and you know, you you take it to heart. I get it. I mean, you take it to heart. When they perform well, you're up and you're yeah. excited, but when they have a tough day, it affects you.
Yeah,
it does.
Last sport I actually really have that with, I've kind of started to bail on other team sports and following it and caring and worrying about the calls and the umpire. And it's just like, oh God, dude, like start to kind of like age out of that a little bit. But yeah. with the NFL, like it's only 17 days out of the year and I can make time for it. And it's fun to play fantasy football with my work buddies. So it's good. A couple other big games. The Jets came back. Flacco, elite again,
yeah.
Elite. Four touchdowns for leading the Jets to come back from down 13 in like the last 2 minutes.
You see names from the past come up like that, and it's kind of exciting, he's been around for a while, and you know he's moved from team to team, and now let's face it, if New York has some good teams, and that kind of adds some excitement and more thrills to the games too. But you know, you said that you play the Bills, and they've been tough on you a long time. You know, you also played the Patriots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know Brady's not there. He's with Tampa Bay, but still, the Patriots are the Patriots. And, yeah. Always good wins. Better, you know, when you win, to look at the positives, I guess.
Right. I mean, we're like 5.5 point underdogs in our own house. So we might not win, but hopefully we keep it close. Those points might not be a bad play. And Kyler Murray led a comeback against the Raiders. I mean, he's pretty damn good. So the NFL is exciting. What else is going on? Anything else? You want to get into some questions? I don't really
You know, we've kind of slided our fans the last couple of weeks. We kind of went a little overtime. We got into talking and some good discussions and things. And we had some long ones and I hope you didn't mind that out there, the fans that, you know, listening to that, but let's go to some questions now. It's a good idea.
All right, cool. Here's one. Since you love your golf, I know we do. What similarities are there, if any, between the mechanics of consistently hitting the sweet spot on a tennis racket and the sweet spot on a golf club face?
Oh, well, I think, you know, going back, the mechanics of golf are much more important than the mechanics of tennis. You know, you have to be precise, even though you're hitting a ball that's, you know, sitting, you know, when you're driving it, sitting on a tee, sitting still, waiting for you to come up and just, you know, send it on its way. But if you don't have the right mechanics and kind of taught right from the beginning, it's tough to figure out how to come back and square the club and to hit the ball solid. In tennis, it's almost, you know, you're hitting a ball on the move, so you don't have as much time to think, which I think in golf sometimes is a detriment. You know, to me especially, if I have too much time to think, then too many thoughts go through my head, and I might as well just take the ball and roll it because it's not going to go anywhere anyway. But in tennis, it's more reaction and the ball moving sometimes getting the ball back any way you can. But in golf, if you don't have the right mechanics, you know, when I first started playing golf, Brett, I actually started playing, and I play right-handed. I'm a lefty naturally, but I started playing right-handed, and my golf swing, and it still is today, pretty much like my two-handed backhand was. Mm-hmm. And now that's not right. I know that's not right, but for me, it's comfortable. And being self-taught, I didn't really learn the right way, but you know, I'm still trying to figure it out. But listen, the main thing, and the question is right, hitting the ball square is in tennis and golf. If you do that, then that's really my main concern, to hit the ball, you know, is in the middle of the club face if I can, and then go find it wherever right. It goes.
Well, the interesting thing about tennis is whether or not you hit it in the sweet spot of the racket depends on your feet more than it does like your actual like swing, right? Like you have to get yourself in position. Helps. Like it's all about the footwork. Like if your footwork is lazy, you can shank it all over the racket in the frame, you know? So you're constantly having to like worry about the movement side. Whereas golf, like you said, you initiate everything, you know, you're standing, you know, kind of still, and then you turn and you fire away. But it is an interesting, similarity, because they both have this small sweet spot that you're always trying to hit. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. I mean, the equipment certainly has changed in golf and tennis. The rackets are bigger, and the golf clubs are bigger. So, you know, for amateurs, guys like me, you know, to have that in golf, it just gives me a little more confidence looking down and seeing something of size, you know, that say, okay, geez, if I miss the ball with something this big, something's really wrong, you know, kind of thing. But it's the same with tennis. But, you know, back when I first started, you know, with the wood rackets, and then, you know, the T2000 and up until the mid 80s when mid-sized and oversized rackets came in, and also golf clubs too, the sweet spot was so small. Mm-hmm. You're right. You know, the preparation and the footwork and you know, the timing of the shot was so important. And that even though that holds true today, I think with the oversized equipment, I think it allows a few more little errors that you can get by with.
Yeah, I agree. I think, but I think you're right. I think in golf, one thing that stands out is that a lot of the guys that play at the highest level aren't using big clubs. I mean, they are on the driver, you know, and stuff like that, but like their irons, they might be an old set of like blades that they've like painted over with their new sponsor, like Tiger used to do. You know what I mean? Like they play with like difficult clubs to play with. But in tennis, right, like a lot of the pros have this gigantic like Babolat racket or like whatever, like, you know, huge frames, and they're like the best players in the world. You know what I mean? Like a guy like Fed played with that old Wilson like pro staff frame up until just whatever it was, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Remember when he went through the racket change and all that stuff? He was just kind of playing with like a pretty old school Wilson staff, I think, you know, so that in that way that it's similar. Like he's like, yeah, there's all these like huge frames out here, but like I'm still playing with old reliable like blades, like, you know, like a golfer would do. So I think it's kind of cool to see, because equipment, it's different. You know, golf and tennis are different than other sports, and football, your equipment is like, it's like your cleats and your pads and your helmet and your shoes and basketball. But with tennis, you actually have like sticks, and like you can, you know, make them the way you want with lead tape, and you shave this, mm-hmm, and you do that, bend the angle here, and you do all these different things to you know, fit your specific swing. And I think that's what's so great about it, because it's like endless, like that stuff. You can tinker and tanker away with clubs and your racket and try and, you know, test it and trial and error. And that's what makes it such a great game.
Yep. And also, you know, the more tinkering you do, that's for me, I tinker every night, because it's an excuse why I played poorly. I didn't have enough lead tape on that one. I better put more lead tape on that. That's why I hit that one to the right, 40 yards right. But it's fun. I mean, it's good to try to figure it out, and what clubs are the best for you. Going and getting fitted for your clubs now is you always hear that, but you know, in reality, if you go and they are made specific for your height, your swing and everything, it certainly does help. But yeah, there you go.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
All right.
What's next?
Next. Okay. What type of training routine did you do before major, including diet? Like how many hours a day? Was it different? You know, when there was a major coming up, did you go like, okay, you know, clear the slate and now we got to get ready for Wimbledon or we got to get ready for the US Open compared to like a regular, like 1 week event?
To be honest, when Wimbledon was over, that next day, I started preparing for Wimbledon the next year. When the U.S. Open was over, I was preparing for the U.S. Open that next day. And to do that, that meant that I wasn't going to do anything out of the ordinary the week before, because that's what got me there. You know, I didn't want to train harder. I didn't want to play longer. I didn't want to start jumping rope longer or jogging or whatever. I always used to see guys at Wimbledon or the U.S. Open, you know, jumping rope and jogging and all that. And I said, oh, I got you. You're not in shape. You know, so, you know, you're never going to get in shape the week before. It's a 365 day year job, you know, to be prepared. And you know, going back, the one thing that I'm probably most proud of, Brett, is that I was always prepared for every match. I mean, I don't think I ever lost a match because I was tired. I was always in good enough shape. You know, you go out and you try to reach as great a perfection as you can day after day. But, you know, sometimes that's 90%. Sometimes it's 70%. Once in a while, you get 110%. But the idea is that, you know, when you walk out there, you're as prepared as you can be. And I never did any other training before the Open. The only thing I did was very seldom I would play an event before a major the week before. I would rather, you know, get used to the surroundings and practice a little bit and be rested and ready to play. But outside of that, you know, my diet, you know, I ate anything and everything. Yeah, I came from, you know, the Midwest and I was a meat and potatoes kid. And You know, going back and, you know, getting up and, you know, I can tell you what I ate. I'd get up every morning, I'd have a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich and, you know, and get ready. And then I'd go practice and then I'd come back and you know, I'd eat another late breakfast or an early lunch and I'd have a cheeseburger, you know, and then before I went over there 4 hours before I'd leave, I'd have another meal. I was eating four and five times a day, but you know, I was never conscious of well, I better eat some vegetables, or I better eat some, you know, pasta, or I better do this. I mean, it was more, you know, what I wanted to eat, and I was comfortable with that, you know. But today is different. I mean, you guys are traveling with a nutritionist, and they're traveling with a trainer, and they're traveling with, you know, a psychologist, and they're, you know, I mean, they're traveling with, you know, six and seven people. And you know, they have those guys to, you know, to plan the menu and to do all that. You know, back in the day, you know, that wasn't part of me doing that. So mm-hmm. Yeah, times have changed. You know, the guys are, you know, they have every opportunity on, you know, with every part of the game,
right?
You know, all games, you know, to be as good, if not better, than you should be. And it's just up to them to take advantage of it.
You said something that stood out. Talk to me about, what did you have to do to learn how to win when you weren't 110%? Because I think you see that with a lot of like young players where like when they come out, and the serve's going in, and they're getting the weak return, and they're firing the big forehand winner, and then they grab the ball and they go do it again, and they go do it again. It's super easy, you know, like it's super easy. Like when I go out there and everything's going the way I want it to, it's perfect, you know. But then, like, that's not how the game always goes. The other guy on the other side's trying to do the same thing as you are. So eventually there's that push and pull with, like, the competition, you know, and there's sometimes where you're not healthy, you know, the day before you played a long three setter. So you're only really 85% instead of 100, or you tweaked your blank a week ago, or you're fighting with your girlfriend, all the different things that could come up that could make you not 110%, which is a lot of stuff. So how do you mental? That's like a huge mental thing, it seems like, because like physically it just is what it is. You wake up. Do I feel good? It's like with golf. Sometimes you go and you're on the range before and you're like, dude, I'm hitting it good today. It feels good. The putting is rolling. And then there's sometimes where it's like, dude, is this like real? Like, do I have three arms or one? Like, what's, you know? So what is it? How did you learn to do that?
Through your mind better. That's called life, you know, and But I've mentioned many times, and I've talked to you about it. My peace was going out and playing tennis. You know, that was, you know, my getting away from, you know, a lot of that. And, you know, that's why I don't think I minded playing, you know, 4 and 5 hour matches, because it was, you know, my solace space, even though there was 25,000 people there and, you know, hopefully millions and millions more on TV. You know, watching, it was my, you know, my quiet place, you know, to go. But learning to win when you're only 70%, it's not something you learn. Yeah, it's something that comes to you. If you're trying to force that feeling of grinding out a match or closing a match from, you know, or coming back from two sets to love and then getting in the fifth and being down and then trying to come back again. If you're trying to force that feeling of winning when you're not at, you know, 100%, you'll never find it. And it's interesting because, you know, you always or I could always find something somewhere to make me dig deeper. No matter what that was, you know, so, you know, sometimes it was just, you know, myself berating myself. And sometimes it was looking back, you know, to where I was growing up. Sometimes it was, you know, something somebody said or, you know, something I forgot to do or, you know, there, I could always find something, you know, to make me, you know, go a little bit longer or dig a little bit deeper or try a little bit harder. But I don't recommend that, you know, that's brutal. You know, to have to figure that out and be walking over, you know, for a changeover and, you know, and smacking yourself on the head or, you know, or on the leg or whatever and saying, you know, listen, you piece of shit, you know, get off your head, you know, get moving. I mean, you know, for me, it worked, you know, and I was criticized for it. You know, people didn't like it. They didn't like my attitude. You know, but I wasn't there to win a popularity contest. I was there to try to figure out a way to win a tennis match. And if that's what it took for me, so be it. You know, but everybody was different. McEnroe was different. Borg was different. Nastasi was different. Vilas was different. Panada was different. You know, all the great Americans that I played with, from Ash to Smith to Tanner to Godfrey to Stockton, you know, everybody had their own way of being able to push or drive themselves. You know, but not everybody was good at going over the edge, you know, and figuring out, you know, if I can go a little bit further, you know, where would that take me, you know, and you know, pushing it that little bit further. I was never afraid of that, you know, to do that, and you know, it paid off sometimes, and it didn't, but you know, at least I was giving myself a chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny though, because some people when they push, you know, like they find that happy medium, you know, but like if they push too far, it goes the other way on them. You know, like where you watch you and Mac go crazy out there and then the match turns in your favor, you know, where like somebody else losing their mind, you're like, oh shit, he's done. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it's like three all in the fifth set or something. And someone like starts pointing at a call and they start bickering with the ump. You're like, dude, he's gone. You know, like, cause he'll think about it for 10 minutes and the match will be over. But with you guys and, you know, different people, you know, what is it that makes you able to thrive when you kind of push past that area that most people reside in?
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, you know, I could get upset and let it go. I'd get it out of my system, and then I'd get down, you know, the next point I'd be down to business and, you know, doing what I had to do, which was, you know, keeping my mind on, you know, trying to win the point and play the best tennis I could. A lot of guys couldn't do that, you know, and, you know, my very, very, very good friend, Ilie Nastasi, he was not good at that. You know, he would go off a little bit and get a little bit upset, but he'd carry it for three or four games, maybe even a set. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, if you're going to go for two or three games, you know, that's hard to give away, hard to come back from. Some guys are good and I hate saying this word, refocus. I hate that word, you know, but I guess to be able to get your timing and your concentration and your thoughts collected after you blow your stack, and do that, you know, there was, you know, is a trait, I guess. And because if you look at a lot of guys, most of the guys can't do it. You're right. You know, they get upset and you look at them and say, you know, time to move on. He's done.
Right.
So,
well, in tennis, like it's a weird scoring because like you look at it and it's like he beats him 6-2, 2-3 or whatever. But when you break down like the points, you know, when you look at matches, there's not a ton of points that will separate a lot of matches. Even if it's like a 6-4, 6-3 match, it might only be like 10 points, 11 point difference or something, you know,
right?
Because certain points are what determine the match. Cause there's this kind of like rhythm to the match where people are going to hold because you have the advantage serving and back and forth. And then, you know, like it comes down to these very specific matches. So when you look at like a score of points, it almost looks like an NBA or a college basketball scoreline where it'll be like 87-74.
But it's interesting, and it's a very good point because that's why you play every point like it's your last.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not every game, it's not every set, it's every point like it's your last, because you said it. You know, it might come down to only 4 or 5 points over the course of a match.
Right.
Where you come out, but those are the points that make a difference. The points where, you know, you maybe grind it out and you figure out a way to win a point where you've been totally out of it, you know, or, you know, because I was always told that you got to make the ones you're supposed to. And then a few of the ones that you're not, those are the key. And that I was always told about, that if you can make a few shots or win a few points that, you know, nobody ever thought you could win and you were totally out of it, you come back and you're lucky enough to win it. Those are the ones that make the difference. And, you know, that's why, you know, when we talked about it just a few minutes ago, you know, trying to figure out a way when you're only 70%, that's the way.
Right.
That's the way.
And it's like, it's almost like there's no such thing as a set or a game. Like tennis is just a bunch of points like strung together. You know, if you start looking at games and sets, like you said, it's, you're not playing a game. You're playing the next point. It's like kind of similar to like that one day at a time. You know, you start like projecting out like, well, this week's going to be tough and this whole month's going to be brutal. And God, this whole year, you know, and it's like, bro, you're just getting through today.
Right.
You know, you just got to play this next point. Don't worry about the 3 points away from that. Just win this next one and then we'll talk, you know, get through this day and then we'll talk.
That's why. Yeah. I remember looking at the draw one time. That's why I never liked looking at the draw. Because I never wanted to get ahead of myself. I looked at the draw one time in a tournament in England before Wimbledon, and to see what, you know, not only what my draw was like, but who was even playing the tournament. And it didn't matter because I didn't make it out of the first round.
So it was a Queens.
Yeah, so no, it was a tournament in a town called Chichester.
Oh, cool!
And because I didn't play the French. That was one of the 5 or 6 years where I didn't play the French. So I was looking for some play before Wimbledon, and then I walked off of there and said, I'm done. I'll never look at the draw again, and I didn't. So
that's funny. All right, next question. Tell me what made Guillermo Vilas such a tough competitor.
Oh, he was. I'm going to say this with the utmost respect, but I could never understand how he could do it. He would play a match, a 3-hour match, and then that afternoon he would go out and practice for another 2 hours or more. And so, I mean, so all that tells me is that you know, his mental toughness was pretty strong. You know, not only did he have a game that where you know, he could wear you out and he could stay out there and play for 4 and 5 hours, but you know, his work ethic was incredible. You know, the likes of, you know, which I don't think I've ever seen before or since. The way he practiced and the way he, you know, and his matches weren't easy, Brett. I mean, he was more or less a baseliner and he wasn't really going to overpower his opponent with his serve, you know, his ground strokes. I'm sorry.
He was a grinder.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and top spin, but he could play, you know, another guy that, say, you know, he'll play 5 hours with you. Right. He didn't care. And then after that, he'd go practice for another two. it was crazy. And I remember seeing him out there. I said, man, aren't you tired? And he'd just keep grinding, just keep out there and putting on the work. And as said, he got rewarded for it. He had one hell of a career.
Yeah.
One hell of a career.
And when we had some fun times with him on the senior tour, he was on the senior tour and he was, I mean, always smiling, always in a good mood and at the cocktail parties and just hanging out by the pool. And it was good stuff. We had a good trip with him down south to Argentina, down to his home country, where we played some exhibitions. It's a good story we got to get into someday.
Yeah, that was a fun 7-8 days, and we went down there and went in the wintertime, and we should get into that one day. Now's not the time, but we should talk about that because that was one heck of a good time.
Yeah, we'll have to have Mr. William Lely on to talk about it with the Red Dog. He was there with us. Experiencing it all along the way.
Oh my.
So that's it. I'm going to let you go. I got to take the golden doodle out. She's down here wanting to go for a little walksy-poo. She's a little itchy. She's got a,
Oh boy. Yeah,
I think it's that time of year. It's like the end of summer where there's like bugs and stuff. I don't know, but she's getting a little like a little itchy on her butt. So we got to get her outside and run some of that energy out of her.
Yeah, get her a little bit of that, but you know, she might have an allergy too, Brett. So you know, maybe, you know, call the vet and see if
maybe.
You can give her, you know, a bit of a little piece of Benadryl or something that that might help that. But yeah, but in the meantime, you can follow me at on Twitter at Jimmy Connors, and you can follow at ADV Connors, and then you can spell Advantage Connors out and follow us, and you can follow Brett at Brett_Connors.
That's right.
And then we can how do we find follow Isabella?
At Gold Dude Isabella on Instagram. She's a star. She's got more followers than we do. Melina manages her account, so they're doing well over there. And that's about it. I'm hanging. We're working Labor Cup this weekend. It's Fed's playing doubles with Nadal in his last match, so I'm working that tomorrow.
Enjoy it.
Yep.
Take care, son, and always good being with you, but I love you. Give the girls a hug for us, and I'll be talking with you soon.
All right. Take care. Talk to you guys next week. Peace.